Jedi, spirit summoning, Sasquatch,
shadow people,
aliens,
sky whales,
dogmen,
demons.
We don't want to scare anybody.
Well, hello, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, brothers. I'm Chris.
I'm John.
And I'm Jeremy. And it's that time of year, guys.
Oh, yeah. It's getting there. It's getting warmer.
Storms are getting stormier. And the camping season is upon us.
How hot is it there, John, in Texas? It's
supposed to be like 93 today.
Amazing.
Ugh.
No, thank you.
73 here, right, Chris?
Perfect.
Ohio?
Yeah. This is a good time in Ohio. Well, actually, it's not a great time in Ohio because it's up and down, but I wouldn't want to be there, John, in your hot, air-conditionless apartment.
Anyway, but yes, it is that it's getting warm out there. It's getting warm enough to venture out.
Oh, I see why you did that.
Yes, sleep under the stars, maybe?
That's right.
Camping season is upon us. And today we're doing Camp Creepily 6.
That's right.
It might be the best Camp Creepily we've ever done. These stories are freaking awesome.
Chock full of terror.
Very full of terror, actually.
Chock full of terror.
Did you hear I mentioned to you, John, I didn't see a response from your text message because I'm your younger brother. But did you read the text where I said we got our first eyewitness Bigfoot encounter vocal?
Yeah.
Right in a speak pipe? Pretty incredible.
Our first what? Bigfoot?
What? Our first eyewitness Bigfoot left a speak pipe. We've had people write in and saying they saw something, heard something written, but this is someone who sent in a speak pipe, so you can hear their voice talking about seeing a 7 to 8 foot tall hairy creature in the moonlight while camping.
Don't give it away.
Oh.
When it comes to Bigfoot, if you see something, say something. That's the rule.
For sure. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of great stories coming up.
Yeah, we do have a lot. We're going to cover the gamut. We also have a Finnish summer camp where a witch enters the girl's cabin at night. There's a lot of good stories coming up, basically. I'll just say that.
Witches, cabins, what more could you ask for? Summertime. That sets the mood. I feel like I should work at a cabin, John. I feel like you look very nice in that button-up, by the way. Very professional. I feel like I look like Ugg from Salute Your Short.
You have a little suntan lotion on your nose.
Why did I think of that?
All right, well, let's get right in there. Let's open up Camp Creepily's gate and head on to our first story. And this is the story I was just speaking of. This comes to us from Bree. She was camping out in Colorado, had a terrifying experience in October of 2000. This is called, We Can't Talk About What Came to Camp Last Night.
Hey guys, this is Bree in Boulder, Colorado, and I was just listening to the latest Camp Creepily episode. It triggered a memory that I really hadn't thought about in a few years, and it's an experience that I can't really share widely because of how crazy it sounds. In October of 2000, I went camping at Ramshorn Reservoir with my boyfriend at the time, his sister, and her husband, who I'll call Kay, as well as my dog, Cody. Kay was a very serious hunter and fisherman, as well as a very imposing man. We were actually there so he could fish. It was a primitive campground. There were no other campers, just us. And we set up camp on the beginning of a little peninsula jutting out into the lake. Kay fished while we cooked dinner, and I picked porcupine quills out of my dog, which was super fun for both of us. We sat around the fire and had a few beers, but I was definitely not drunk. When we were tired, we piled into the tent, and I let my dog chill outside. I know, in retrospect, that was really stupid, but the tent was small, and he was 90 pounds. It wasn't too long after we had settled down in our tents when my dog started whining in a way I had never heard before. He sounded really, really scared. So I unzipped the tent to bring him in, and when I did, I almost gagged. There was such a terrible smell. It smelled rotten, just so bad. I was worried there might be a bear or something, so I hurried back into my tent with my dog. As I was lying there wondering what had scared Cody, I was hit with the incredible urge to pee. I mean, when I realize I have to go, it's really overwhelming for me. I'm lying there trying to will myself back to sleep without peeing, when I feel a thump in the ground that feels like someone dropped a boulder. And then another. And another. And I'm about to lose my mind because I can tell it's definitely getting closer. It crosses between our tent and the truck camper and pauses right there in front of us before continuing on. There was only one way this thing could be going, and that's to the end of the peninsula about 40 feet away. It sounds bipedal, but for the life of me, I can't think of any wildlife in Colorado that would be that heavy and walk on two legs. So I'm about to piss myself, but the humiliation of peeing in the tent and explaining in the morning was greater than my fear of whatever was out there at the end of the peninsula. I unzipped the tent as quietly and slowly as my bladder would allow, but guys, it sounded deafening to me in that moment. I looked to the end of the peninsula before I got out, and clear as day, under a big bright moon, was an 8 to 10 foot hairy humanoid, just standing, gazing over the lake. I could see its side profile. I pissed myself right there and then inside the tent. I felt crazy and also terrified. I lay there clutching my dog, laying in my own urine, and listened to it as it walked back through our camp. I finally fell asleep at some point, and in the morning, I told my boyfriend that I just sweat really bad. We were packing up, and I asked Kay if he had heard whatever it was that came through the camp last night, and he looked me dead in the eyes and said,
"We are never gonna talk about what came through camp last night."
I mean, he scared me, and I knew he meant it, but I was also in total awe because I had actually seen the Sasquatch and that they were real. It was like being told that magic was real. When I got home, I got on my dial-up computer and found the BFRO website and sent the email. They blew up my inbox for weeks wanting more details, but I was scared that if they went to the site, that Kay would know it was me that told them the story, so I never got back to them. When you go to their site, under Ouray County, that's O-U-R-A-Y, it says that there was only one sighting in 1996, but that the last report was 10 of 2000. That one was me. Thanks for listening, guys, and helping people like me who experience these things feel less alone.
Awesome. Thanks, Bree.
Yeah. I mean, you got the rocks, the boulders. Did you say a boulder? Or like some sort of like...
Well, she was, I think, referring to the way it sounded and felt when it was walking. It was like a boulder
hitting the ground. I think I filled in some details.
Tossed something like a boulder?
Yeah, because you just hear so many of those stories of encounters with Bigfoot where there's rocks being thrown or boulders being thrown.
Mm-hmm.
But she said that's what it sounded like, walking.
Yeah. And the first thing that hit her was the smell of the death decay. You hear that all the time. And the fact that the dog was signaling, you know, this dog that never made these noises before freaks out and she brings him.
The question is the death just, you know, dead matter on them, like rotten matter? Or is it
something more like spiritual?
Or yeah, like more sulfur, like, kind of demonic sort of thing. Because...
I mean, you hear some of the stories and you're like, yeah, you're like, okay, this sounds like it came straight from hell.
Right.
Some of the more terrifying accounts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people are divided. But I love that visual of it just standing under the moonlight. It's just taking in the view of the lake at night.
And this one didn't sound too threatening.
Yeah, it didn't attack or, you know.
I can't imagine what it'd be like to actually see something that large.
Magic. I guess it's like,
well,
magic
it wouldn't
is real.
Be, feel like magic in the moment. It would feel
right.
Like complete terror just to see something that large. It's like seeing a bear. But like a polar bear, like the size of a polar bear,
a magic bear. Well, yeah, and there's just the factor of like this is a monster. This is something that shouldn't exist, and it is in front of me.
Right.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that, Bree.
Yeah, great story.
Did she say it was Ram's Head or Ram's?
Cool. She said Ram's Whore. Wait, is that right? That was in the transcription.
I don't know if the transcription was correct.
Yeah,
because I was going to say
Ram's Hole. Maybe
there are accounts in 1986. Large creature herd, smelt, maybe the word?
Sure.
But
it's a fish.
I think the sighting by two people in that same location, 1986, and then something with a pilot being involved. Anyways.
Oh, interesting.
So, I mean, yeah, of course, Colorado, you know.
At first I read it and I was like, oh, it's interesting that she didn't leave more detail in originally with her account with BFRO. And then that makes total sense when I re-listened to the account that her friend's husband, Kay, was like, we're not going to talk about this. So she didn't want to put the story out there and then get back to them.
Why do you think he was like that? I wonder, was it just his demeanor?
Could be. I mean, it could be he didn't want to accept what the reality of what happened. It also could be, who knows what his career, his job is, position.
I'm sure it's probably a combination of all that stuff.
Well, thank you for being brave enough to share it, Bree.
Absolutely. Fascinating.
Well, shall we mosey on down the trail?
Yes.
What do we have next?
What a way to kick off Camp Creepily 6. That was great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I like that Bigfoot story. I don't like all of them, but...
I mean, I believe her. It's excellent to hear in, you know, someone's actual voice You know, it sounded like she wrote down her account and read it.
Right, yeah.
But you can still hear the genuineness in her retelling of that.
Oh, for sure. I'm sure that, yeah, like, you know, I had that UFO sighting. When something like that happens to you, your whole worldview changes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of you, John, when she said everything felt, it was like magic. Like, you're finding out magic is real.
It yeah.
It changes your paradigm.
Speaking of which, we won't be covering it on this episode, but John, if you want to, check out the latest SpeakPipe that came in. It's, again, our first. We've had people talk about abduction, SpeakPipe around abduction. This was a magical UFO sighting on Christmas. This whole family experienced on the roadside. So awake, not like I was asleep and I woke up and it could have been sleep paralysis. This was like a giant craft coming over their car Christmas Eve on the highway.
Yeah, it's a really good story.
Yeah, check it out. But we'll do that in the future, but awesome story.
Yeah.
All right, this next story is a classic account of a terrifying attack from a terrifying apparition. But what I love about the story is the setup is that this guy grew up in a home that was made out of cabins from an old summer camp.
Oh, yeah.
So perfectly fitting for Camp Creepley. There's more to this land where this guy grew up. There's a really fascinating aspect to the forest there where there's no sound. He's seen entities within this forest. I forget what he calls it, like the dark forest or something. But we're going to focus on the what happens in this cabin home. This is called The Man in My Cabin Home. And this comes from our listener, Cherno.
When I was around the age of 2, my parents bought a house and surrounding property in a remote area. The land was historically part of a church camp in the early 1900s, and the house itself is made up of the old cabins that had been moved and connected together. The person we bought it from was the daughter of the original builder of the house, so effectively, we are only the second family to live there. When I was a young child, my bedroom resided in one of these former cabins. Around the age of 6, I could remember seeing the spirit of a man watching me from the corner of the ceiling all night, every night. He was average in height, maybe around 5'8", albeit I only saw him from his waist up, the lower half just kind of blurred into nothing. I say he was this height because he looked like the same size as my father, who was 5'9", slightly overweight, with black or dark brown hair, dark eyes, a square face, and a red and black check hunting jacket. He exuded this sense of pure evil, like he just absolutely hated me. Thinking back, he gave me the feeling of,
"Get out. This is my house."
This came to a head when he tried to strangle me. This spirit put his hands around my throat and tried to squeeze. He had strength, like an actual person was trying to do it, but I could still move too, so I was able to squirm away. This terrified me so much that I never slept in that room again and even refused to go in there well into adulthood. It is currently my father's office. I was later able to identify this man when I went to the local college and saw a photo from the 1930s. It turns out, he is the man who originally built the house and whose daughter we bought it from. The way my parents reacted to this influenced my view of the paranormal for years to come. My mother is a full believer. She has had a near-death experience as a child and has seen spirits and auras all her life. My father, however, is a pure skeptic who simply refuses to entertain any such ideas. Another weird thing about this property is that because my mother and I are believers, we wanted to research the history of the house to see if there are records of any children dying. Strangely, records from that time are absent. And when we went to the local historical society, they were friendly with us until we explained which house we wanted information about, after which they became immediately hostile and told us there's nothing to know and we need to leave. Weird. This is a small town, and we are not local to the area and have always been treated like outsiders. So I don't know if this is related to us being outsiders who aren't privy to local knowledge or not.
Horrifying.
Yeah.
Floating man in the corner of your room who just wants to strangle you.
You know, he built the house himself. He just wants to keep it to himself. Apparently.
Or is he some sort of dark leftover residual of that person's personality? It's just all evil.
Regardless, though, I mean, that would be quite frightening as a child.
So this was a former campground, right? It was a church camp, summer church camp, much like the one we went to growing up.
Camp Luther.
Just with more.
Camp Luther, a place apart. Where we grow in spirit.
Yes. Good spirit.
Good memories.
Not a demonic lumberjack man.
Yeah.
As far as we know.
And the faded half torso thing. I think we have another story with a similar account today. That's such a common thing, the torso. Like, you got the top going for you, but the bottoms, you know, it's a no bottoms party for what? The spirits. I mean, like, you're the torso. Like, it's just the top of the body.
Okay.
There's no legs. You know,
I see what you're saying.
It's right out of Frighteners.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Now,
the attack is unique. You don't hear that a lot. Physical attack.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
Yeah.
I mean, to actually have a physical choking sensation like that.
Yeah.
I can see why they would not go back in that room.
Yeah, absolutely.
Once they cross that physical line, which doesn't happen very often.
No. At least that you hear about. You know, you got like the Sally House, things like that.
Or what was that movie? The Entity?
Oh.
I don't know if it was a Hollywood movie, but it was maybe in the 90s. It was kind of a biopic film but it's like one of the most famous cases of like a poltergeist.
But yeah, it does happen. So I just keep that in mind. If you are living in a home you think might be haunted, it's not always, they're spirit, they can't hurt me.
Yeah.
It's obviously cases where that can happen, whatever.
Yeah, so keep that in mind as you're falling asleep.
If you're considering purchasing a home where a spirit may live, be careful about your decision.
Maybe have a conversation with them before you decide to buy the house.
Yeah.
Do you want me here?
Or build a home out of old haunted cabins.
Yeah, that is a cool aspect of the story. The last thing I'll say about it is just it's interesting. You know, they had that very unique physical attack. And there are, like I said, there's other entities that are strange, even inhuman entities living on this property or were in this part of the forest. That's like this silent, dark forest, he says, where nothing grows.
Yeah.
Which we might get to in a future episode.
Primordial darkness.
Yeah, I was wondering, you hear these connections sometimes. I wondered maybe did this all start with his mother who had a near-death experience and then was able to see auras? Was there some connection to the other side that remained after she had gone over?
She opened the door, maybe pulled something through or something followed her back potentially.
Yeah.
And that land in between.
But thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. What's up next, Chris?
What's up next, Chris?
We're the Flintstone kids.
Shut up, Jeremy. Down the street.
10 million strong and growing.
That's weird flashback. All right, we're going to go to Boy Scout time.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Everybody's favorite time, Boy Scout time. We do have a Girl Scout time coming later. I don't know why I'm calling them times, but.
Do you hear the Girl Scout cookies have like all sorts of heavy metals and stuff in them?
Heavy metals?
Yeah, they're like some of the most horrible things you could ever put in your body.
The Girl Scout cookies?
Yeah. That's what I read this.
It doesn't super surprise me, but.
They did like a study on them.
They're like uniquely bad. Is that what you're saying?
They're uniquely toxic.
Every parent right now who has girls in Girl Scouts is like, stop.
Sorry.
Talking.
Well.
I think the sale season's over at least.
You might want to consider that before you.
Sell poison?
Yeah, look it up.
That's creepy.
It is.
Yeah, I will fact check that.
Switch to the car wash model.
I think the mint ones are like the worst.
Well, good. I hate mint. With food. That's toothpaste flavor. You don't eat mint. Come on, people.
We were not Boy Scouts or Scouts of any kind. We were Indian guides, but not Boy Scouts. But I just want to say this is a great book. This was Uncle John's. And I found out Dad had the same one. So we have two copies of this, but
it's a great cover.
It's like 1950s, 40s or something.
For the people who can't see, what is it called? What are you holding up?
It's called, maybe you can read it there.
Handbook for the Guide of the Recently Deceased.
No. Handbook for Boys. Boy Scouts book. But it's just so funny. It's like just a complete different world. Like,
yeah, I'm sure.
One is, if I just open one here, cut artery of arm. And that shows you if you cut deep an artery of an arm, and it literally says where blood is spurting out, how to stop your cut artery. Like the survival stuff in here is pretty crazy. Like you can, you know, finding your way home or way out of the woods, not just with the North Star, but with any star, like actual guides. And it's just cool. It's cool. I just feel like I wish we had more of the self-reliance now.
Yeah.
Just make sure you don't leave your home without your phone. That's where it comes now from.
Exactly. That's like the only thing in the handbook now is like charge smartphone.
Fully charge your phone.
But I recommend it. Pick up a copy. We'll have it in the merch store.
Anyways, well, we're going to join a troop right now, actually. Well, this is it's actually a secondhand account, but it was such a terrifying and interesting experience.
I love the story.
Jeremy's got a weird fixation on dogmen. So
who doesn't?
This is maybe arguably one of those accounts.
How could you not fixate?
Jerry, do you want to introduce this?
Yeah, I love the story. This I love any story that takes place in the 90s or the 80s for some reason, but this is an encounter at a scout camp.
California.
And again, it comes from Anonymous. She says it's not her story to tell. But I think what I love about the story is the kind of her hearing the story from her friend is sort of part of the story because of her processing of the, or I guess, experiencing his trauma.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the telling of the story to her was like, okay, kind of plays a big role in the believability, I think, credibility of when she heard the story from,
yeah,
from Jay, as she calls him. This took place in the late 90s in California, and it's called Boy Scouts versus Werewolf. You asked for creepy camp stories. It just so happens I have one. This isn't my story to tell, so I will remain anonymous. A few years ago, during a fireside gathering which had progressed over many hours, people were divulging deep thoughts late into the night. A friend of mine, who I'll call Jay, shared a story which not many people have ever heard. When I asked him about it again recently, he ignored it entirely and became withdrawn. I think it's still a traumatic thing for him, and maybe he regretted telling it to us. When Jay was about 11, he was actively involved in Boy Scouts. During the summer, they would spend a week in the California mountains at scout camp. He, being a rather mischievous and rebellious kid, decided to venture out in the middle of the night and explore with his tent mate. Looking back now, as an adult, that is a wildly bad idea. But back in the 90s, things were more relaxed. People would stay as their pairs in their own tents, scattered around an extended campground, not necessarily close to the scoutmaster's tent. They left after midnight, sneaking out with flashlights, and hiked for about 30 minutes. That might not seem like much, but when you're in the forest of California at night, as children, completely alone, that's pretty far. Jay said they followed a natural ravine, which they could backtrack to camp so as not to get lost. They eventually came to a large, half-circular clearing with a meadow, bordered by uncommonly thick trees. They felt they had gone far enough and considered the clearing as a natural turnaround landmark, but also felt urgently that they should head back immediately. The thickness of the trees didn't look right. It seemed foreboding. There was a strange feeling about the way the area looked that hit both of them. Directly following this feeling, they saw trees rustling at the opposite end of the clearing. They watched branches moving towards them at a high rate of speed. Suddenly, something exploded through the trees. What Jay described was a literal werewolf charging right towards them. He said it looked just like the drawings he had seen. It took his body a second to realize that it was real. I think a mixture of being frozen in fear, but also a kind of malfunction in his mind, unable to process what he was seeing was reality. He thought it was animatronic, because werewolves aren't real. But reality set in quick. He and his friend started running and screaming for the scoutmaster. When we asked him what it looked like, he said it had illuminated red eyes, mangled dark fur. It smelled bad and was drooling. The image in my memory has an evil smile on its face, but I'm not sure if that's a fact he added. He said this thing chased them for what seemed like hours, but was probably only a few minutes, and at times it felt so close, he could feel its hot breath on his back. That part is interesting to me now, because it follows the same pattern of other encounters. Dogmen can apparently keep up with a car, so if it wanted to, it could have caught these kids and done God knows what. But it didn't. It remained just close enough to scare the hell out of them. He said it felt like his heart was going to explode from fear and from sprinting 20 minutes straight until they got close to camp. They were so terrified they went straight to their tent and stayed awake until morning, crying and shaking in their sleeping bags. When they told the scoutmaster in the morning, no one believed them. This was before I'd had my own experiences with paranormal things, before I realized that there are creatures in this world that are real. I know now what these young boys saw was a bona fide dogman, but 15 years ago, I wasn't sure. I knew Jay wasn't lying, so we all tried to find a feasible explanation. Hallucination was ruled out, since his friend also witnessed it. We wondered if it was a person in a costume. Jay insisted there was no way. They were far from camp, and camp was already remote as it was. The chances of a man in a costume hiding deep in the woods in the middle of the night, waiting for hours, with the risk of getting shot? Next to impossible. But then we thought maybe it was a camp counselor trying to teach them a lesson. Jay was really frustrated at that suggestion. He said we just didn't understand. It was 100% not a costume. This was a real thing. 7 to 8 feet tall, huge, strong, horrifyingly scary. Someone suggested he go on TV and tell his story. Another friend said, that's a bad idea, because if this thing is actually a human who turns into a werewolf, he'll see you and know who you are. I saw Jay's face turn white and disturbed at this realization. I don't think that possibility had ever occurred to him. A half werewolf, half man, looking for him, with intelligent design. I know now that these two kids had an actual dogman encounter in the woods of California during the 90s, and I think to this day, it's still causing trauma to my friend. I can't imagine how terrifying that must have been. It would scare the hell out of me as an adult, but especially with them being children. He still seems affected by a general heaviness, kind of a darkened spirit. I've never seen one of these things for myself, but I know they're real. There's a reason for the legends of werewolves going back hundreds of years. There's a reason you can find thousands of first-hand encounters all over the internet. They're real. Dogmen are real. Werewolves are real. This channel is amazing for telling these stories. I love you guys. I'm a super fangirl of the whole. Thank you so much, Miss Anonymous.
Horrifying.
Reminds me of that story that we watched. What was that one ghost show?
I think I know where you're going. Paranormal Witness?
Yeah.
Talking about the werewolf in the shed.
The three guys that were like camping.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the brothers that were out, yeah, hunting and or fishing. Yeah, they took a boat.
They had a boat. I remember that part, yeah. Just weird how it does seem to like scare, but not kill.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm sure they kill too. They can, yeah, probably, but it's weird. Maybe there's like a, maybe it's like a hunting license. You can only kill so many humans like per year.
So most don't.
Yeah.
But they still can feed off of the fumes.
Right.
The fear eater. Most people, oh, by the way, shameless plug, make sure you get your Dogman mug and drink it from it while Camp Creepily. There you go.
Oh, it's still so funny that the way the labels are.
Those are fixed. They're not in the middle anymore. They're on the side.
Now they're here.
So funny that you didn't know that.
Doesn't this mug look cool? Look at how cool this mug looks.
You have to turn your arm around to see it.
Camp Creepily is pretty bad.
Anyways, it is cool. Those are, you guys, come on. Buy some mugs.
You know, if Dogman can drink your fear, why don't you drink out of a Dogman mug to get back at them?
Yeah, get them back.
Like you're drinking their energy, taking it back.
That's a good way to put it.
But that does remind me of, it always reminds me of that. I love that story from Linda Godfrey, her book. Was it Real Wolf Men? I'm trying to remember which book it was, but where the boys are running. I think they're like teenagers or young, like 20s, group of kids running down some like road, corn maybe on each side. I can't remember exactly the details, but they can feel the hot breath on the neck. But if it's that close, why not take the swipe? But it is very controversial in the world of Dogman to say that they do not harm, they just scare, because, you know, then people come out and say, well, I've had experiences or I know people.
My favorite part of the story was when, because it really landed for me when she said that her friend described it as, at first he thought in the moment, his brain was trying to make sense of it. And he thought, is this an animatronic coming at me? Because your brain is just trying to figure out, like, and then suddenly he's realizing, no, this thing is alive. And then runs. But in that moment, your brain is just processing, like, what am I looking at?
Yeah, that's what happened to me when I saw that thing. It was like, I just felt like my mind was like flipping through a Rolodex of like what it could be. And it knew that it didn't fit into anything.
Yeah.
And so it creates like a weird freeze in your brain. It's like seeing something that shouldn't exist.
You're just like short circuit. Yeah.
For a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
For the first couple seconds.
I feel like that's almost where a kind of fear manifests at that point. You know, there's like when you can't figure something out, I feel like even if what you're not looking at is scary, it's scary that you can't figure it out, if that makes sense.
Breaks your mold of reality.
Yeah, it's like the uncanny valley of existence. Like I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, great story. That animatronic aspect reminds me of that classic Dogman account around Halloween where someone was in their car, I believe, driving by, and there was like a...
Oh, yeah. That was one of our listener stories.
Dogman in a ditch or something, and they thought it was... like a Halloween mask at first, until they realized, like, oh, maybe it wasn't even near Halloween. I forget how it went. I'm really good at retelling stories. off the cuff.
It was on Halloween. It happened on Halloween episode. But
the point is, dogmen are real. People are seeing them. And that's where I stand.
They're everywhere.
What a world we are living in. Sasquatch is out there battling dogmen.
Especially in the time of camping, Chris. What's our next camping story?
Oh, yes. Let's move to the next cabin, see what's going on in there. Oh, I love this story. This story I've been wanting to do forever, but I wanted to break it down a little bit before I did it. But it is a out there story. This is a story about a really surreal encounter, very vivid, involving a mysterious woman in an interdimensional gateway inside of a tent.
Ooh.
This is really cool. This story comes to us from James Thompson. Let me know what you guys think about this one. It's definitely a unique story. This happened in March 1969, Saturday morning, Portland, Oregon, in the Buckman neighborhood. This is a glimpse into another dimension. I was in the seventh grade, and we had just moved to a new town. There were two very pretty girls in my grade, Mary and Chris, and yes, I've changed the names for the sake of anonymity. They invited me to walk with them to the house of some boys from school. I knew the two boys in question and agreed to walk with the girls. As we arrived at the house, we walked up the driveway that led to the backyard. The boys were on the grass near a camping tent, the old A-frame canvas type. The boys greeted us, and we spoke only for a moment.
Hey, guys.
They mentioned something about some beer they had brought out. Then the four of them headed toward the open front flaps of the tent and invited me to join them.
You should come, it'll be fun.
I was somewhat apprehensive about it, assuming that they intended to engage in activities that were inappropriate for me, so I politely declined the invitation. The girls said they would see me the next day at an event that I knew about.
See you tomorrow!
And told me goodbye as the four of them opened the flap on the tent and entered it.
Bye.
I said okay and turned and started to take a step toward the driveway to leave. I suddenly remembered that I couldn't attend the event the next day because of something else I had planned, and decided to just pop my head into the tent and tell them about it so they wouldn't think I had stood them up the next day. Because the last of them had just disappeared through the front flap of the tent only 1 or 2 seconds earlier, I thought it would be okay to just open the flap and correct my statement. I lifted the right flap and looked in, and was surprised that I couldn't see anyone inside. The tent was only about 5 feet across at the front, and I assumed it was about 8 feet deep, so I gave my eyes a few seconds to adjust to the darkness inside, because it was fairly bright outside the tent. A clear day with blue skies. Within a few seconds, I could see what was inside the tent, and it was not what I had expected at all. I could see far back into the tent. It seemed to be hundreds of yards. There was a ravine, and I could hear water running down below, as if there were a creek and a small waterfall. Trees and plants covered the hills on the far side of the ravine, and it rose and went on for at least a few hundred yards as it rounded the top of a hill. It was a little dim in the sky above the treetops, as if it was evening there. I was shocked, to say the least, and wondered how it was possible to see a vast outdoor scene inside that small tent in the backyard. I looked up where I could see outside of the tent, and everything was perfectly normal. I saw the trees in the yard and the birds on the power lines. I looked around and saw how small the tent was, looked at the grass in the yard, saw a few toys that belonged to the children, and I looked over at the house. Everything was perfectly normal. I looked back inside the tent, and the scene was exactly as it had been before. I stuck my head in further this time, making sure I was actually seeing the panorama of a forested ravine and hillside. For the first time, I looked down, and I saw a young woman with very light skin and long dark hair sitting there, directly before me, facing away from me. She was unclothed, and her hair flowed over her shoulders and down her back beautifully. I was shocked. I had never seen anything like her before. I assumed it was Chris at first, because it actually resembled her. But that was impossible, because I had seen Chris fully clothed and walking only 10 seconds earlier into the tent. This young woman was the only person I could see now. No one else was around. There was no sign of my friends. I looked over her head at the tropical forest scene in the distance, hearing the sounds one would expect to hear in an active wooded area. I looked back down at the girl in front of me and confirmed in my mind that she was there, real, alive, unclothed, and absolutely stunning. I fully realized how impossible this all was and sniffed the air to see if maybe there were drugs present and I was hallucinating. I only smelled fresh, humid air. I looked outside the tent again and everything was normal. Not a single thing seemed out of place or abnormal in any way. I looked back inside the tent and saw the young woman in the panoramic vista one last time. There was nothing vague about it. It was all there, in three-dimensional full detail. It was all as real as it was impossible. I knew instinctively that whatever this was, it was not for me. I looked down at the girl again, and something told me that it wasn't Chris. There was something slightly abnormal about her. I noticed her skin and a slight glow. It was beautiful, but not normal. I glanced back up to the other side of the ravine, then took a step back as I looked at the scene and closed the flap of the tent. I looked around the backyard, checking my perception of reality again. All of that had happened in only 15 or 20 seconds, and it was all so fresh and confusing that I had no idea how to process it. I turned and started to walk away from the tent, making a mental note of everything I saw, heard, and felt. I kept thinking that there must be something wrong with my perception, because what I had just viewed and experienced was absolutely impossible. I looked around, checking everything, touched everything, and it was all perfectly normal. I looked back and saw that the tent seemed completely normal, just an old camping tent standing in the backyard where I had talked with my friends and seen them enter just 30 seconds earlier. The grass was normal, as well as the sky and lines between the poles and the houses beyond the fence. Normal, normal, normal. I touched the house as I walked by it, running my hands along the chipped paint on the wood siding. And I reached down and touched the water spigot on the side of the house next to the driveway. When I got to the sidewalk and street, I touched the cars, feeling the smooth paint and chrome trim and the side mirrors, all to see if there was anything off about my perception. Nothing was abnormal at all. So, what did it mean? Who revealed that faraway land to me in such vivid detail inside the tiny confines of an old tent? No answer ever came. The only thing I ever knew for sure was that my instinct was correct. Whatever that was, no matter how fascinating and alluring, it wasn't for me. I was correct to turn and leave immediately. I've always had the distinct feeling that if I had remained, it would have been the end of me somehow. If nothing else, this experience has taught me once and for all that there is much more to this life than we perceive with our five senses, and that there truly is a very thin veil that separates us from other worlds. What was that?
Very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be one that's, I think, going to be hard for a lot of people to believe just because, obviously.
Well, it's so incredible.
Yeah. A tent to another world.
I mean, yeah, it's we've talked about, you know, time slips and, you know, dimensional crossovers or whatever you want to call it. Especially in fairy stories, you know, you hear that sort of stuff a lot. But to have an experience like that where...
Very Narnia-esque.
Yeah, absolutely.
Through the wardrobe.
We talked about the Sandown Clown last episode, and it reminds me of that too a little bit, because there's that... It's the same sort of thing. I think when the kids went into that guy's craft or tent or hut or whatever, it was a totally different, incredibly large space on the inside.
It was James, right?
Yes.
Did he talk to the naked lady?
No. I didn't even know if he ever saw her face. She was facing away.
So, but then he went to like buildings and touched them to make sure they were.
Yeah. Well, after he like had, because everything in there was so different from the reality outside the tent. So he's just trying to like make sure everything's real.
But he didn't touch the naked lady.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Weird science.
Yes. Yep.
Just reminds me of that.
Oh yeah. Like,
oh, where they create their own girl.
Some fantasy girl. Yeah. It's just like.
Does remind me of like, yeah, like a seventh grader's fantasy.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
Should have taken her back in through the tent. It's our world. Had your own magic naked lady.
That's abduction, Jeremy.
That's true.
Yeah, maybe it was like a lure.
Oh.
Yeah, well, that's what I love. What he said there I thought was fascinating, where he said, no matter how fascinating, alluring. So lure, yes, it wasn't for me. I was correct to turn and leave immediately. I've always had this distinct feeling that if I had remained, it would have been the end of me somehow. Some sort of trap. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's typical fairy activity right there throughout time. You hear those kinds of stories.
Don't get seduced.
Yes.
By the attractive naked people.
Pay no attention to the naked lady in the interdimensional tent.
Or naked man, depending on the person that's looking.
That's true.
If it's a trap.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fabio. Fabio's waiting.
Yeah, hilarious.
There's a throwback.
Like the next night, it's like a girl who's camping there and she goes through and there's just like a naked
Adonis man.
Like just a really broad fellow with long blonde hair, but doesn't turn around. Yeah.
Well, hello.
Well, hello, hello, Bleefling. Come join us.
It's just John in the tent.
Come hither.
Anyway, thank you for sharing that. I know that's probably a harder story to share because it is so out there. It probably, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to think that my leg is being pulled, James.
I believe it. I mean, obviously, if I heard him in his own voice tell it, it would be easier to decide. But, I mean, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility with everything we've talked about, obviously. But.
Quantum, man. Quantum.
That's right. Quantum realm.
The quantum world is stranger than we could ever imagine.
That's true.
Look at the double slit experiment and
yeah.
Schrodinger's cat.
Exactly.
I'm just saying that at the fundamental level of our reality, it doesn't behave the way we should imagine it to.
Right. We know nothing about how things work, really, right. In reality.
Yeah.
Which makes life so interesting. Thank you, James.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, by the way, when he gets back, people might be curious what happened after this. He gets back, he tells his mom about it that night, because he, in his mind, he wants to make sure he gets a record of this. So in the future, the next day or the next year or 10 years, he has someone to ask, what did I tell you?
Right. Kind of a secondhand witness.
Yeah. So he tells her about this crazy experience. His friend tells his best friend. He believes him, as hard as it is to believe. He trusts James. And you might be wondering, what did his friends say that were there, that were allegedly in this nether portal?
Yeah.
What do they remember of the experience? So he says that he went to school on Monday and none of them brought it up.
Really?
And he quickly got the impression that they didn't experience him coming back into the tent, and whatever they were doing, he thinks was probably normal kid stuff, smoking, drinking, or whatever.
So they had a completely different normal experience.
Well, he never asked them, but that was his assumption.
Oh, okay.
Because of what they were, how they were acting, and that they never brought it up. And so he thought, you know, let sleeping dogs lie, probably.
Sleeping campers camp.
Basically, he just thought they would think he was crazy. So he never brought it up to them.
Yeah, definitely. Probably the strangest story we've ever had.
A good interdimensional account is always welcome in the belief hole.
Yeah, hard to find.
Yeah.
Thank you, James. We appreciate it.
What's coming up on expansion?
Oh, the expansion.
Ah, yes. Members only expansion episode this week is going to be epic. Right, Jer?
This is going to be a legendary expansion episode.
It's a long time coming, actually.
We are going to tap a little bit into John's secret obsession. Well, maybe not an obsession, not so secret. His recognition that a lot of things we cover in the whole are
kind of like it.
Yeah, there's a definitely a theme,
aka Pennywise from Stephen King's It.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. That particular it is it. There's this theme of fear eaters,
Nightmare feeders,
the things that are doing the eating of the fear, the nightmare feeders. Yes, that we've talked about many times in many different forms, and so we're finally directing that toward the form that John, I think, is most friendly with, which is the clown.
Oh, yes.
And we're using this to start off with a fascinating story that I'm sure many of you guys out there are familiar with, that we've been dying to dig into and tell in belief hole fashion. And that is the story of Sam, the Sandown Clown, or All Colors Sam, as you might be familiar.
Yeah, we've been waiting to do this for a while, and it's come off quite often, and we've gotten facts wrong in the past, just kind of referencing it off the cuff.
Great lead-in.
So we wanted to give it its due justice, because it is probably one of the most outrageous Fortean cases.
Extremely unique, I think, in the literature.
Yeah.
Of unexplained encounters.
Yes, and we're going to be getting into the background of this case, the strange visitor that arrives in the Isle of Wight in 1973, that strange Fortean year that always seems to come up. And we're going to investigate the appearance of this sort of clown robot-like
karaoke singer
entity
that appears to these kids.
Hello, are you still there?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating story. We will be bringing a new belief hole angle to the story. And
yeah,
really excited to talk about some other fascinating and just generally creepy accounts with the clown entities.
Yeah, Sam is not alone. We've got reports of other clown-type figures that have defied logic. True encounters, allegedly true run-ins with these strange characters.
Yeah, maybe unrelated in what their origin is, but
right, yeah, not related
clown,
to Sam.
So
Sam's not so dark, but some of these other characters, like
pretty dark.
The clown with the floating on the umbrella, for instance.
Oh yeah, visiting the children on the avenue,
grinning through windows,
climbing up staircases with knives in its mouth,
whispering promises of candy or chaos. Yes, clowns are fascinating, not just the kind at the circus with the makeup and the fun and the cotton candy, but there is a strangeness to clowns that I think a lot of people are drawn to.
And recognize either consciously or unconsciously.
Exactly. And if there's a superpower that clowns do possess, I think it's their ability to straddle that uncanny valley and almost wield it as a fear flame, I guess.
Oh, I like that.
A weapon of great evil at times. And yep. These aren't the good clowns.
It's the liminal space, right, of human and sort of inhuman that they operate in.
Yeah, so we're not talking about street clowns, your everyday friendly road clown who might help you across the road, because that's something that happens. But we're talking about maybe things that wear clowns like a costume, like the mask, the puppet of the fear eater, mm-hmm. to lure you in and to terrify. So yeah, anyways, it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, so if you're not a member yet, head on over to bleefhole.com, click on the big red join the expansion button, and we will see you over there.
That's right.
Double the episodes, double the fun.
Without further ado, here's a quick clip from this week's expansion episode.
Punch it.
Access granted.
Little backstory. All of these things happened when my mom lived with us. She divorced my dad when I was around 12 or 13 and basically moved back to West Virginia and started a new family. Most of the paranormal experiences happened while she lived with us. My mom is a very troubled, I would almost say a malignant individual. Our double wide is located on about 10 acres. Some of it is field, most of it is wooded. In fact, woods surrounded our house, except for the front, which was just a sparse amount of trees. Further ahead was a large cleared field. Across the field is where my aunt and uncle lived with my cousin. I was coming back over the field from my cousin's one night, walking. I had stayed too late, and it was really dark. I think there were only two of those big floodlights on the poles for a quarter of a mile distance. Anyways, I finally got to the threshold, where from the field my yard began, and I could see my house. I got a creepy feeling as I was coming up, and looked behind me. And there, standing much taller than I was, as a 9 or 10 year old girl, was a man in a clown suit. Just standing there. How he got there behind me, right next to me, without making any noise at all, in the tall.
All right, welcome back, guys.
Hi.
Welcome back to camp.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Chris.
Yeah, you're always welcome, Camp Creepily, John.
Appreciate your cordial thinking.
Cordial thinking.
Very hospitable, Chris.
That's what they call me. All right.
Cordial Chris.
What a weird nickname that would be to have.
Cordial Chris. That's
weird. That's so cool.
Big turn on for the ladies.
Yeah, right? Like, nice guy, Chris.
You heard that Chris guy? He's so cordial.
He's so cordial. He greets everyone with a smile. Very friendly.
That's great. I am courageous as well. We all know this. I remember Karate Chris. He was my favorite.
I was Jump Kick Jeremy.
Ooh, speaking of hobbies, I never actually played karate.
I never actually played karate.
You can tell because I called played karate. Played karate. But look what I got, John.
Did you ever play karate?
Speaking of camping activities.
Is that a bow?
Yes.
Where'd you get that from?
Amazon.
Of a dead man in the woods.
I'm going to be getting into archery.
So, what?
Yeah.
That's right up your alley.
I wanted to do it since I was a child. And then
he was a big fan of elves.
My good friend Brian, who listeners know of, he got into it about a year ago. I didn't even know. So he was talking about it and us coming up and,
what are you,
and
Joe Rogan?
Trying out with him. Yes.
Only Joe Rogan can use a bow and arrow. I've always wanted to, but I have this bad eye, so I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Use your other one.
No, but it feels awkward.
Use your third eye. Anyway, just want to share that with you, let you know that I am cool.
That's cool, man.
You can call me Archer Chris now.
I appreciate that.
Okay. All right. Moving along. Let's get around the fire here and tell our next tale. All right. This next account comes from CR, and it takes place while camping on South Mountain in Arizona.
Oh, this story came in a long time ago, and I found it compelling. Let us know what you guys think about this and what could explain it, but he does a good job of telling it.
Sound will be fun on this one, John.
Yeah, I mean, it's about sound in a way. This is called Horror on the Hill.
Mm.
Hey, y'all. This is CR. Let's just stick with that. So I'm going to tell you about an experience I have had, one of many in my life, but I don't want to go into the previous ones because I've had a very strange life. I had a 3-year period where I was dealing with paranormal activity on a consistent basis. But basically, when my really dark period was between the ages of 16 and 19, and this experience I'm going to talk about actually took place a few years after that ended, and I didn't have anything weird happen for about 3 or 4 years. So in my early 20s, I was living in Phoenix, Arizona, and I had a roommate who was a really cool kid, but he wasn't very experienced in hallucinogenics and things like that, and I thought I would try and open his mind because I'd been doing hallucinogens since I was very young because I was a bit of a psychonaut and studied the esoteric and the occult from a very young age and things. But either way, I had recently found a YouTuber back then who had been filming videos of weird UFOs around South Mountain in Phoenix, Arizona. So I was like, hey, for your first time, we're going to do mushrooms and we're going to go camp out at South Mountain. Maybe we'll see some aliens. Like, woo, yeah, let's do it. And just so you know, our experience, we never even got to take the mushrooms. So what I'm going to tell you is not affected by drugs or alcohol in any way. So we get up to South Mountain, we find our spot, we go up there, and after we had set up our camp, right then, some car pulls up next to his car. We can see it down the hill, because the slope is only like, it's like maybe 50 degree slope. So you can see down to where the parking little area pulled up, that we pulled off on was. And this car just stayed there right next to his car. And he got kind of like weirded out by that. And he was like, I got to go down there and check it out, make sure everything's all right. And I was like, yeah, for sure. And I just stayed up there in our campsite and I was finishing setting things up. And it was about 5 minutes had gone by and I was kind of like, why hasn't he come back up yet? This is kind of weird. And then I was just hanging out, trying to like set things up and like just chilling. And then all of a sudden, I got the overwhelming feeling of dread come over me. And, you know, this is a common thing people talk about, but it's something I had been very familiar with from the past experiences of my life. So I was like, okay, this is not good. And I kind of tried to wait it out for a few minutes, but it just persisted and got more intense after a while. So I just started packing everything up. And he hadn't come back up yet. I could tell, I couldn't see him walking back up the hill, even though it was dark, but I could just tell like he was still down there by the cars. Anyway, I pack everything up. I grab both our packs and I start to get out of there. And one thing I should have said is that before we went on this little trip, we went to the store to buy a bunch of supplies and we bought new flashlights with brand new batteries. And as I'm walking down the hill with our brand new flashlight and batteries, they start flickering like a horror movie, and I hear this noise all around me, like if you've seen the Tron sequel, like the D-Rez sound that happens when they like jump out in the air and become a bicycle sort of thing. It was that type of noise. It was just like... everywhere around me. And I didn't think to like try and look up at the time because I was just looking around everywhere around me to see what the hell was going on. And I bombed it down the hill. I ran full speed down a 50 degree slope and got down there. And my roommate was just talking to some guy in a car, laughing it up, saying that, oh, we have to leave because the mountain closes at 10 p.m. and you can't be there. And we later went back to the house and I gave him mushroom tea.
This is like a nice way to end the night.
Interesting.
After that experience.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to take mushrooms after that.
No.
Opening the door.
No, that sound. Weird sound. It kind of reminded me of the way he described it. Reminds me of like if you had a really strange experimental aircraft dropping. You know, sometimes you can hear a plane.
Yeah.
Like just suddenly it'll be like.
Stealth bomber sounds super weird.
I don't know if it slows down or drops out of hyperwarp.
Whatever. Yes, that's what's happening.
It's dropping out of hyperwarp.
Probably is what's happening.
I wonder about that mountain. I wonder if there's any interesting lore around that mountain.
It did sound like a warbly kind of engine.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what sound he's talking about. It'd be interesting to check it out.
I checked it out. Pretty cool. I could play it real quick, actually.
From Tron.
Did you ever see the movie, John? Jeff Bridges?
The sequel?
I don't think so, actually.
Here, I'll play it real quick.
Preview to program.
Grid is live. Initiate light cycle battle.
It's almost like a transformer.
Yeah.
Yeah, like kind of shifting autotronic.
Cool sound. It'd be scary to hear on a mountain by yourself. Yeah. It's a pretty cool sound.
I would definitely think it was some sort of like craft or something.
Especially if it's coming from above you.
Yeah.
Or all around you.
Some sort of futuristic vehicle.
Yes. Maybe it was a man turning into a bicycle. You never know.
And that sense of dread. That to me feels more fairy-esque or some sort of.
Right.
Or maybe it was just his, you know, his getting his cockles raised because he was on
something so unknown.
Unusual.
Yeah, like just had a spidey sense about it. That's something that shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And interestingly, South Mountain, Chris, you might remember that name. I'm going to read you just a quick quote here from the Phoenix New Times. This comes from an article published June 26,
1997. Ooh, I think I know where you're going.
That year might sound familiar. Quote, air traffic controller Bill Grava was on duty on March 13th at Sky Harbor International Airport. So, credible witness. He too saw the lights. Which lights? But not until they were on the southern horizon, slowly disappearing behind South Mountain, where our witness has had his strange experience. The lights were so bright that he thought they might have been flares. He confirms that the object or objects did not register on radar as they passed overhead, a fact seconded by Captain Stacy Cotton of Luke Air Force Base. But if this hasn't given away yet, I'm going to just read the top of this article that I love just because of the certainty of it about this event that has now become obviously such a classic account in the field of ufology. Quote, there is no doubt that something real passed over Phoenix on the night of March 13th. Hundreds of people reported what they saw passing slowly in the sky. Two New Times writers were among those witnesses.
The
Phoenix New Times.
Okay, gotcha.
Anyway, so two journalists who wrote for this paper happened to be witnesses. That's which is cool. Probably why this article starts off with something definitely real passed over Phoenix that night. And this was written just a couple months after the actual account.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there it is, South Mountain. That's where CR had his experience.
Definitely lends more background to the idea of something dropping out of hyperwarp. As we were joking earlier.
Yeah, exactly. A little more corroboration.
Yeah, Phoenix Lights. I love that case, partly because I remember just seeing the newspapers the next day. We were like in seventh grade. And I just love the fact that Kurt Russell is one of the, maybe the first guy to call it in. He was piloting, I think, like a Cessna or something over Phoenix, which is just a cool little piece of trivia.
Yeah, interesting little aside.
You got Snake Plissken up there getting ready to fight the aliens. Awesome. Very interesting. Yeah, I'd love to camp out there tonight. Let's do it.
Yeah, we'll meet you there, CR.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting little account.
I definitely had some pretty unique accounts on Camp Creepley. This might be the best one we've done.
I think it might.
Definitely some solid stories.
And there's some, by the way, guys, if you've submitted stories, there's some, we obviously don't have time to do all of them.
Right.
But there will always be more Camp Creepleys.
Next edition.
God willing.
God willing.
Let's see that mug one more time, Chris.
We also have other merch there too, shirts, and we don't really talk about it that much, but if you want to express yourself.
Dress yourself.
Whole attire.
Yes.
Dress yourself to express yourself.
Indulge in the whole.
Beliefhole.com.
Yes!
All right, Jerry, why don't you take us down to the next cabin on the block.
A final story of the evening.
Gather close around the fire, my friends.
Grab your magic carpets. Squares.
Magic, yeah, these are carpet squares. I think they were just called carpet squares, yeah.
You'd go, like, listen to the teacher read, and they were magic carpet squares.
I loved hearing those words because I knew it was story time.
I always felt like I was Aladdin, and I was going to fly away on it.
Into your imagination. That was the plan. Yeah, we're going to do this next story, this final story, in two parts, because that's kind of how she presented it. I really enjoyed this story. Yes, this comes from Jeanette, and you're going to hear some familiar aspects of any kind of deep woods horror
you know, backcountry, Bigfoot-esque potentially. Something's out there is kind of the point. Let us know what you think it was. And we'll just go ahead and begin with part one of Something's Coming.
Dear Belief Hole, I wanted to share my experience with you. Well, more than just mine, but I'll explain that later. I'm hoping that some of your listeners have experienced this as well and have some ideas on what could have happened. My husband, Carl, not his real name, by the way, and I, we decided to drive out to the Three Peaks Recreation Area one night before we were married. It was a short drive from his family's farm. At the time, it didn't have any campsites, bathrooms, or anything other than trails that people made with their bikes and vehicles, and it was usually scarce on people. That has changed, but that isn't really relevant. The reason we decided to go out was to burn a bunch of things that I had from a past relationship. You might be able to guess, because unfortunately it's common, but the relationship was an abusive one. I guess I wanted to just feel like I was letting it all go and starting over. We drove out after the sun had already set. We were in a truck that was recently purchased. We followed a long dirt road to the main entrance in that direction and pulled over because Carl needed to empty his bladder. While he was outside of the truck taking care of business, I started to hear a knocking sound. It was rhythmic and just loud enough to be noticed. I looked around, but it was dark, so I couldn't really see anything that could be making the noise. Carl jumped back into the truck. I asked him what the sound was. He said he didn't know. I was starting to feel off and a little nervous. He turned the truck's engine off to see if the knocking sound was coming from the truck. As soon as he turned the key, the knocking sound magnified. It no longer sounded like it was coming from one area. It sounded like it was coming from everywhere all at once, completely surrounding us. The knocks picked up in volume and speed. It was getting louder and faster, and a feeling of dread and fear hit me like a ton of bricks. We only sat there for a few seconds because Carl turned to me with wide eyes and said, "Let's get out of here." He turned the engine on and sped back to the farm. We didn't speak a word to each other for the entire 15 or so minute drive. When we got back to the farm and parked, Carl turned to me and said, "I don't know what that was, but I've never been so scared in my life." I agreed that I was terrified and that I had no idea what had just happened. My heart was still racing, I was shaking, and my stomach felt all twisted up. I can't really describe the fear that I experienced. It was accompanied with the feeling that something bad was coming. Carl said that he felt like if we didn't leave immediately, something bad was going to happen. We decided to burn things another day, and we didn't go back out to Three Peaks for a while. We have since been back, even in the dark, and nothing of note has happened. We have told other people our story, and no one really knows what it could have been. I'm not sure if they even believe us. I've looked around online and found similar stories. I've even heard some similar stories in other podcasts. Some people, I hear, believe it is a warning that there is a Bigfoot around. Carl likes to tease and say because there were so many knocking sounds, it was a pack of big feet. I'm not really sure. I can't really explain it. There isn't anything in the area that would have made those noises. The way the sound started like a soft knocking and then grew into a surround sound of faster, louder beating knocking noises in the middle of nowhere isn't something I can explain logically. We thought it was just going to be one of those weird things that happen and you think about from time to time, share with friends when spooky things come up. But other than that, you just go on. It was just that. Until about a month ago.
Until a month ago.
Interesting.
Dread of the Night Knockers. What were they?
Yeah. That something's coming. Every time I hear that, especially the way she was describing that, just reminds you of that experience we've talked about on the show on Stonewood. Do you remember that? Talking about that?
Mm-hmm.
I remember it as a child having this one night, having that sense of dread that something was coming. We were all arguing or something. And then suddenly there was this feeling like there was this darkness. It was like on its way to our window, on its way to our house. That just reminds me of that. Like you can feel the presence of something negative, something, you know, otherworldly maybe, but that feeling, that like dread, sudden dread that's building.
If it wasn't a pack of big feet, you know, just knocking out there.
Yeah.
Maybe, because she was out there to burn.
I was thinking that too.
Things from a previous relationship. Is that what she said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, dark energy there.
there already was something that she was trying to get past, and maybe, yeah, who knows, that may have attracted something.
Yeah, that when she said that definitely made me think like some sort of energy was being looked at or harnessed to some degree.
There was bait on the line.
Especially since it was an abusive relationship.
Yeah. And how do you get that kind of, you know, how do you get that off of you, that energy?
It reminds me of, I watched, was it Dr. Sleep?
Oh yeah. Stephen King, sequel to The Shining.
Yeah.
Ewan McGregor.
Just recently again. They can smell when there's
Oh man.
Children.
Oh yeah. That actress is great too. The hat with a hat.
I didn't like that movie the first time I saw it.
I fell asleep.
But I liked it the second time.
Jeremy ironically fell asleep during Dr. Sleep.
I did the first time I watched it.
I thought it was good.
It was good. Sleep. But better the second time.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I didn't like that act. I didn't like the main character bad guy at first.
The girl?
Yeah, she just didn't seem like a bad guy to me.
She's in Dune, you know, it's great in that.
But I thought, I liked it the second time. She was kind
That's kind of why I liked her though.
Rebecca Ferguson.
At first she seems good, and then she's like obviously like the worst kind of creature.
She just doesn't look that scary, obviously.
Because she's so nice looking.
Beautiful. Yeah.
But yeah, it was worth a second watch.
But yeah, I thought it was good.
But yeah, there's a feeder right there.
Yeah, based on something real out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's another example. I mean, obviously fictional from the mind of Stephen King, but that's exactly the sort of like...
Boy, is that not a metaphor for adrenochrome, though?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
That's all I could think about the whole time.
Eating of the fear, exactly. Giving that immortality.
Like using children. I mean, yeah, it was pretty dark.
Goes into conspiracy theories about the elites. And
it was kind of dark watching it from that perspective.
Yeah.
Knowing that there is stuff that does probably go on like that to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, it ties so much into what we talk about with, like, you know, nightmare feeders and interdimensional parasites and things like that.
It's all based on actual lore info, you know.
Yeah.
If not real accounts.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there's a reality behind a lot of what King writes, even if he doesn't believe it.
I mean, he's involved directly.
They're all autobiographies. He is Pennywise.
He is a nightmare feeder. He's just snorkeling up all the fear energy from all the books he writes and people reading it.
Yeah. It's part of his contractual obligation to his success givers.
Got
to
do the deep research.
It's the conspiracy. Anyways, I was trying to say, how do you get this stuff off you, and can it attach to other members of your family? Well, I think we've heard in the past that it can, and this kind of comes into play in part two of Something's Coming.
I like that.
My son works as a lifeguard at our local pool. He sometimes gets home after dark. One night, about a month ago, he came home around 9 p.m. and ran into my room. He was breathing hard and was generally hyped up. I'm pretty sensitive to other people's moods, so I immediately picked up on his amped up energy. When I asked him what happened, he told me this story. Near his place of employment, there is a large parking lot. There's a paved walkway on the side opposite of the pool that is connected to the same parking lot that leads to some baseball fields. There are three fenced-in baseball fields with a cement walkway and bleachers in between them, with a kids' park in the corner. He walked down to one of the fielded areas where a Pokemon Go game was located. He was fighting the gym in order to take over the gym and put a Pokemon inside of it. If you're not familiar with the Pokemon Go game, I'll just let you know that the gym is not physically located there. If you have the Pokemon Go app on your phone, the gym is there all the time as part of the game. Anyway, he said that he heard the sound of a basketball bouncing on the ground. It was a consistent rhythm. He looked around confused because he was in the middle of a field, and the sound was close enough that it didn't make sense to hear a basketball bouncing on a field. As he was looking around, the sound started getting faster and louder. He said he was filled with dread and fear. He sprinted back to his truck and drove home quickly, leaving the sound and whatever it was with it behind. When he got home and told me the story, he said he felt like something was coming to get him. He was terrified. He also said that when he heard me tell him my story from years previous, he didn't really believe me, or at least understand what I was talking about when I described the dread and the fear. He understands it now. I have found that many people I talk to have experienced at least one thing in their lives that is considered supernatural or unexplainable. It could be the reason people are drawn to podcasts like yours. I would like to have an explanation of different experiences I've had in my life, but I think I'll have to wait until the next life to have my curiosity satisfied. Thank you for reading my story and for creating such a great podcast. We love the brotherly banter the storytelling, and the excellent research you do. Thanks again, Janet.
Cheers, Janet. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet.
Sweet.
Again, it's that something's coming feeling. Like now it's her son in a different location.
Yeah, years later.
Bouncing instead of a knocking. Yeah, interesting.
Well, that's what's interesting. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. You would hear something like something that point, like a basketball kind of sound on a hard surface in the middle of a field getting louder and louder.
I mean, it reminds me of so many stories. And we actually have one that we didn't do yet on this. We'll do it maybe on the next Camp Creepily, but where there's a drumming. You know, that's again with like the
theory
counts. It all ties in the lure, the something's coming, this feeling of dread being out in a remote area and then a building, boom, 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 boom. Yeah.
Thrumming. Thrummy caps.
Oh, yes. Thrummy caps. Thrummy caps out there.
We do have several more really good Camp Creepily stories that we'll have to go to the next anthology episode. But yeah.
I think we had a lot of good ones this time. A lot of just unique stuff, I think.
Yeah. And that's always what I like looking for within our archive is what are, you know, get a menagerie of strange stuff.
The corroborative threads.
You know, I think the tent one was kind of one of my favorites just because it's so strange.
Thank you. I've been waiting on to do that one for so long because it was initially a lot longer of a story. So I had to kind of figure out like what needed to be included.
It's like an alternate dimension.
Yeah. Yeah, I will give it a better name too. Something to do with a tent.
Thrummy caps.
Thrummy caps.
I want to play. Dude, that was such a funny, all those names are just so strange.
Oh, from that episode? Yeah.
Just the list of all the.
That was hilarious. Yeah, we should drop that.
Yeah, that was a good. Just drop that clip right now.
Yeah, I'll drop it.
What was that from? Do you remember what episode?
I was reading off a list of things in a certain area or something.
Is that from the expansion?
Yeah, that was the expansion, I think. It was just a list of lore of all these different creatures.
It's from like Rosemary Ellen Guiley's book or something and just like listing other similar things.
There's so many funny ones.
And it was just like brownie, snottle nose, nozzle
duke and quarks,
dribble horse,
skunky morphs.
I should play a clip of it real quick.
I'll drop it in. According to Catherine Mary Briggs, who you guys might be familiar with, she wrote an encyclopedia of fairies, hobgoblins, brownies, bogies, and other supernatural creatures we covered in our Missing 401 Fairies episode. She says, quote, "Those born on Christmas Day cannot see spirits, which is another incontrovertible fact."
Okay.
"What a happiness this must have been 70 or 80 years ago and upwards to those chosen few who had the good luck to be born on the eve of this festival of all festivals, when the whole earth was so overrun with ghosts, boggles, bloody bones, spirits, demons, ignis fati, brownies, bugbears, black dogs, specters, shellycoats, scarecrows, witches, wizards, bar guests, Robin Goodfellows, hags." Anyways, it goes on about 100 more different types of weird entities throughout folklore.
John has the perfect expression on his face. What is a shellycoat?
And these names are so amazing. The list is ridiculous.
Read it again.
All right, the boogers. We'll just continue where I left off because there's about 100 more. I won't read them all.
Good. All of them.
But they are fun.
It'll be the rest of the episode. You're just reading.
There are that many? Really?
Where did I leave? Did I leave off on hobthrusts? Okay, Robin Goodfellows, hags, nightbats, scrags, breaknecks, phantasms, hobgoblins, which we're familiar with, hobhollards, boggy bows, dobbies, hobthrusts, there we go, fetches, kelpies, warlocks, mock beggars, mum pokers, emmy birdies.
Mum pokers.
I like it.
Urchins.
It sounds like satyrs, verbal vomit.
Pans. I know, right? Fauns, sirens, tritons, centaurs, calcars, nymphs, imps, incubuses, spoons, men of the oak, hellwains, fire drakes, kittikin sticks.
Kittikin sticks.
I almost gave you guys each several handfuls to read because they're so great.
No, I think you can probably finish them up. I think that's plenty.
Okay, I'll finish up here. To finish up, I'm going to skip about 50. I'll put this in the notes for you guys because it's fun to read. Maybe over Christmas dinner. Jack in the Wads, Thrumpy Caps, Cuddies and Nieces.
Thrumpy Caps.
Wasn't that so good?
Dude, these are like thank you names or something. Right? Thrumpy Caps. That is something you just totally make up out of nowhere.
Is it Thrumpy or Thumpy? Thrumpy?
Thrumpy. Thrumpy Caps.
Thrumpy Caps.
Mommy, it's a Thrumpy Cap.
Thrumpy Cap at the door. I'm a third generation Thrumpy Cat, I'll have you know. Okay. Thrumpy Caps, Cuddies, and Nieces, and apparitions of every shape, make, form, fashion, kind, and description, that there was not a village in England that had not its own peculiar ghost, nay, every lone tenement, castle, or mansion house, which could boast of any antiquity, had its boggle, its specter, or its knocker. The churches, churchyards, and crossroads
were all haunted. Every green lane had its boulder stone, on which an apparition kept watch at night. Every common had its circle of fairies belonging to it, and there was scarcely a shepherd to be met with who had not seen a spirit.
Oh, I love words. Fun with words.
Anyway. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, we hope you guys had a good time at camp. We will be going back to camp again this season at some point.
Start gearing up for summer. It's coming.
That's right.
Come camp along with us.
If you have any stories, any experiences, whether it's summer camp, you're a counselor, whether you went camping with your grandpa and you turn into a vampire, whatever it may be, we'd love to hear the story.
Or just hiking.
Do you think we'll do another one in the summer?
I'd like to, maybe towards the end of the summer.
Towards fallish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That'd be cool.
Yeah, bookend it. Bookend the summer with some fun camping stories.
Yes, if you have any good camping stories, send them in so we can prepare.
And hey, get out there now. Go some camping.
Yeah.
Go do some camping. Get away from the screens.
Touch the trees.
Enjoy some life.
Yeah.
Put your feet in the grass. Do some grounding.
Yeah, and if you have an experience, you know where to send it. I'll just say that.
Right into the hole. All right, guys. On that note, have a good evening.
Fun.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. On
Believe-hole.
Get it.
Want to do it again?
Sure. We'll see you next time. On
Believe-hole.